Sri Guru Gaura Vinitai Gaura Premanandi Om Sampadaya Krishna Saranayi Om Aginati Miranda Sya Dhana Dhana Salakaya Chaksu Sivilitan Jaina Tasmai Sri Guru Venama Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Vitale Chayam Vipakadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Mantra Kalpa Tubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaya Yidha Patitam Bhavinidha Vaishnaya Queen Kunti Devi's prayer or to Krishna, who simultaneously and inconceivably she recognizes both as the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, and also as her nephew. Is that your phone?
Someone's phone.
Yes, not mine, because I didn't bring it. Okay. What is amazing about that? That she simultaneously sees or understands and knows Krishna, realizes that Krishna is simultaneously her nephew, and at the same time knows that he is the undiminished Supreme Lord. Yes?
How do you relate to them in both contexts?
Okay, what do you mean? Explain that a little.
Well, she relates in the testimony to knowledge of both.
Explain it a little more. What are the two different ways of relating? How does the uncle, well, in your case, relate to the nephews, the children of his sisters and brothers?
With parental affection.
Parental affection, and also they're clearly inferior.
Yeah.
They're in inferior position. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand,
to the Supreme Lord, we approach him in great reverence and awe.
Yeah, and he's obviously, because he's the Supreme Lord and Sarvakarana Karana, the cause of all causes, obviously he's in the superior position. And that's one definition of God, of the Supreme Lord, is Asama Udha. Asama Udha means that no one is equal to him and no one is greater than him. That means that everyone is inferior to him. So on one hand, Kunti Devi is seeing herself completely inferior to the Lord, because he's the Lord. And on the other hand, she's seeing herself as in an affectionate, maternal mood to her junior, her nephew, because the superior's affectionate affection naturally leads to blessings and helping and praying for the welfare. But how do you, there's clearly a contradiction. Yes? Yes. Okay, now how did Kunti deal with it? How did she deal with this contradiction? I wouldn't say it's a contradiction. What's the difference between a contradiction and a paradox? I don't know how to say it in Hindi or whatever, because it's technical. What's the difference? Yes, a paradox.
A paradox is where two things are true from opposite points of view. They're both true. A contradiction means saying something and saying the opposite.
Okay, I hadn't thought of it quite like that. The way I thought of it is that a paradox is something that you can't reconcile them. They're not reconcilable. And a contradiction, this seems to be a contradiction, but if I look at it from a different point of view, maybe I'll understand it. Like a contradiction, if I say to you, water is hard and water is soft at the same time, that's a contradiction. Or water is liquid and water is solid. But it's a contradiction that the contradiction can be removed by understanding in different temperatures water will take different qualities. But to say it's simultaneously day and night, it can't resolve it unless you say it's day here, night somewhere else. You can figure out a way out of it maybe. But something that's paradoxical means there's no question of resolving it. So Kunti Devi doesn't resolve this. She has affection for the Lord as her brother's son, and has affection for him like that. And at the same time, she knows he's the Supreme Lord. In one mood, she's thinking like this, and one mood, she's thinking like that. And yes.
I have a slightly off-track question.
Okay, should we wait till the train goes to the station, or do you want to ask it right now?
Is Mother Yashoda and Nand Baba aware that Krishna is not their son, but Devaki's son?
Who said that? Who has said that they're not? He's not their son. If you tell Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj that, they would become very upset. And actually, Uddhava once said that to them. Uddhava said, should know that he's the old, that he's actually the super soul. He can't be your son. How could the super soul be your son? Because he was trying to, he thought, this is after Krishna had left Vrindavan. So he thought, they're not going to survive one or two more days even. So therefore I have to lessen their affection for him. So I'll tell them some philosophy. So Nanda Maharaj, he heard that and he said, this, and he also told them that, you know, he's also a Yadava. And Nanda Maharaj just thought, this boy is very intelligent. But because he lives in Mathura, and they've told him again and again, he thought that Uddhava is very intelligent, he just doesn't understand, though, Krishna's position, that he's our son. And he said that I will go into the assembly of the Yadus, and I will declare to the Yadus, I will tell them that it is a principle of the Supreme Lord that he goes wherever he is shown the most affection. And therefore I will announce to all the members of the Yadu dynasty, no one has more affection for Krishna than us. And then he said, oh, take Krishna by the hand after that and just take him home. But he didn't do it. Did I answer your question?
So they don't...
What was your question?
Is Mother Yashoda and Nand Baba aware that Krishna is not...
Who has said that they're... Don't you know that Krishna is the son of Nanda Maharaj? Maybe you've been in Mathura and associated with Kamsa too long. No, Krishna is the son of Nanda and Yashoda. Nanda and Yashoda. This is because otherwise, why did Yogamaya call Krishna Anuja? Why was Yogamaya considered the younger sister of Krishna? Could you answer that question? She says that and he's been born. My young brother has been born already. So that indicates that because she took her birth from Yashoda Maya, that, could you put your hand down for a second, young man? You have to wait till I finish, okay? You have to wait till the train comes to the station before you get off. Try to get off, okay? And there's several Shastra proofs in this regard. So the conclusion is that Krishna, as Vasudev Krishna, takes his birth in Mathura. And then this is the explanation of Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, which we accept. And Prabhupada explains this also in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam in his commentaries, his purports. So Vasudev takes Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, who has almost all the qualities of the unlimitedly attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nandanandana, and brings him to Yashoda, and that form of Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, because Krishna himself, Bhagavan Swayam, includes all the incarnations, so that Vasudev Krishna goes into Krishna, and then he exchanges, and then he takes the girl child, who is the younger sister of Krishna, to Mathura. So what was your question again? No, it's not a paradox. This one's not a paradox, nor does it even... we just resolved the seeming contradiction. Paradox means it's not resolvable. But we just resolved it. Yes or no?
I think I'll have to wait for a few years to understand.
Okay.
Intellectually, yes.
Okay, well, of course. Yes, sir.
I was thinking that I would go to the Yadus and say that they love Krishna the most.
Nanda Maharaj. This is also explained by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in a commentary in the 46th chapter of the 10th canto, right at the end. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has a long commentary on this. And then when Akura takes Krishna on the chariot, then he bathe Krishna Balaram, bathe in the Akura Ghat. And the Jamuna there, and then Krishna stays in the Vasudev Krishna form, that form comes out and goes to Mathura, because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Easy to understand. No problem. No worries. Any other questions? Yes.
So where does Subhadra, his sister, where does she grow up? So I just realized I don't know anything about her.
Really? She's the younger sister of Krishna from Vasudeva Devaki. Younger sister of Krishna from Vasudeva Devaki.
But did she stay with Vasudeva Devaki?
She doesn't come to Vrindavan at all.
What about Mathiyatra?
Yeah. But she doesn't come to Vrindavan. In the Krishna's Leela. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Is that a contradiction or a paradox? Or neither? Shall we read about Kunti Devi's prayers? I started this, didn't I? By saying that Kunti Devi both understood Krishna was the Supreme Lord and also experienced him as her nephew, and she kept that, and the two moods were there. And also Vasudeva and Devaki had those two moods. And Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, they, in one sense, they had those two moods, but they knew that Krishna was all-powerful. They saw him so many times, but to do things, and even the gopis knew that Krishna was he was Lord Ram in his previous lives and things like that. But their love for Krishna overpowered their knowledge. The Madhurya overpowered the knowledge of his Aishwarya or opulences. And that's not so hard to understand. Let's say, if Braj Mohan, is it okay if I use you as an example? Okay, if one day he becomes the President of the United States, for example, I doubt it personally, but say, for example, and then he's the President of the United States, and then he goes to his mother's house, and his mother says to him, Praj Mohan, are you getting enough to eat? Is your sweater warm enough? And things like that. This is what mothers do. And even when the child, even if the child, when they're grown up, this is what mothers do. Do you have that? Yes, that's what mothers do. Yes, Mataji, yes. Even though they're grown up, they always see them as little, and fathers also. But they know it. They know that they're grown up. They know that the president of the United States, he doesn't have to worry about if he has so many people serving him and things like that. He doesn't have to. They don't have to worry about these things. They know his position in opulence, but because their relationship with him, their affectionate relationship with him, is so strong, they don't care. In one sense, it overpowers the knowledge of who they are. And so it's not that they don't know, but their love overpowers the knowledge aspect. So that's the residence of Vrindavan. So Kunti Devi had, she offered so many prayers, and now we're nearing the end of her prayers. And in the last section, she spoke about the appearance of Krishna. The section before that of her prayers, she spoke about his pastimes of bewildering, because there he is, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Controller, whom nothing is different from, and yet he steals butter. So very, very mysterious. And not only does he steal butter, but when his mother catches him, this all-powerful, all-pervading Lord cried. And why does he cry? He cries because he's afraid. He's the all-powerful Supreme Lord, and yet he's afraid of his mother's chastisement, genuinely actually afraid, because her love is so strong. And when her love overpowers her knowledge of him, it's so powerful that it also overpowers his knowledge of who he is. So just like our example with our young president over here, president-to-be of the United States, when his mother says, are you wearing your socks and things like that? Then he starts thinking, if I don't get my socks on quickly, who knows what's going to happen, what she's going to do to me. she might not let me eat my lunch or something like that, or maybe stay in my room. So this is what we experience. You take on the mood of a child, because the mother's love is so strong. You take on more of a child, that you enter into that aspect of your personality and your nature. Mm-hmm. So similarly, not only does Mother Yashoda's love overpower her Aishwarya-gyan, knowledge of his supremely powerful position, but it also overpowers Krishna's knowledge of his own supremely powerful position. So this is the great mystery of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So in one pastime, when it's complicated in the sense of the sweetness of the relationship with Krishna, mm-hmm. when Krishna had eaten dirt and Mother Yashoda brought Krishna before him, before her. Krishna, have you eaten dirt? No, Mother, I didn't eat dirt. But Balaram says you eat dirt. He's lying. But Balaram's your elder brother. He would never lie. And then Krishna's crying, saying there was some politics this morning. And Mother, they wanted me. They had stolen some sweets, and they wanted me to eat these stolen sweets, and because I never do things like that, I refused to eat them. And Balaram became angry at me and said, okay, I'm going to get you in trouble for this. And when I threatened that I was going to tell you, Yashoda, Maya, that they had stolen sweets and were eating them, Balaram wanted to undermine my credibility as a witness. So he was going to tell you that I've eaten dirt. So this is the politics, local politics. So Mother Yashoda said, open your mouth. And Krishna opened his mouth and she looked inside and she saw the universe and the mountains and everything, oceans inside his mouth. So why did she see that? Did Krishna say, I'm going to show her who I really am? No, but because Krishna was afraid of her punishing him because he in fact had eaten dirt, earth, his Aishwarya Shakti had manifest just to protect him. So therefore, when Mother Yashoda looked in his Krishna's mouth, she saw that, and immediately she became reverential, and saying, look how strong Maya is. This boy has the universe in his mouth, and I'm seeing even myself in his mouth. And she said many, many things, but then she said, just see, and I'm considering him my own boy, my son. So the Aishwarya-gyan began to overpower the Madhurya-gyan, the sweetness of the relationship. And Krishna became frightened, and he thought, uh-oh, if Mother Yasoda is thinking like this, who's going to feed me? Who's going to take care of me? Who's going to cuddle me when I'm crying? Because he was his mood was like that. He wanted to relish that. So therefore, immediately Yogamaya came and just withdrew that, or made her love for him increase even more. And then that whole mood just vanished. And she thought, okay, because I just don't eat dirt anymore. Do you eat dirt sometimes? Oh, only in Vrindavan and Gokul, yes. I think we went through this one already. And you haven't eaten the dirt of Vrindavan yet. Raise hand if you've ever taken a little Vrindavan dust of butter.
I don't remember.
Don't worry, we won't tell your mother if you say yes. Raj.
Yes?
Have you ever eaten Vrindavan dirt? Yes. Dust yet?
Yes.
Have you taken a little bit? Why? Next time?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Unless we have some. Do you have some? Do we have some? Okay, before the day is done.
He has taken because we all had some at the retreat.
Yes, but he didn't eat it.
This is such an honest Brahmin boy. Okay. Today when we give you your Braj Raj, we're going to video it. Just to make sure you do something clever.
I'll do this.
But we'll have panoramic 360 camera watching the whole thing. Why not just take it? It's good for you. Okay?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, this is, we have a recording of this, by the way. So we already agreed to it. Just little, no problem. See, because to not eat dirt is intelligent and it's good. But to eat a little bit of Braj Raj is even more intelligent and beyond good. It's transcendental. Okay? Now, we were talking about Kunti's prayers, weren't we? So Kunti Devi was explaining why the different opinions of those who say that why Krishna had come, because it's very mysterious that the unlimited, unborn has taken his birth, either from Devaki or Yashoda, but he's come and taken a birth, or simultaneously from both. One is Vasudev Krishna, and one is Nandanandana Krishna. So the conclusion, she gave many different opinions, but the conclusion was the last verse that she said, which was in this regard, was that you've come to rejuvenate, bring back to life, to inspire people to hear and chant about your pastimes, because Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and his pastimes in his Naralila, his pastimes like a human being, are so appealing and attractive that people like to hear about them and they like to speak about them. And so to rejuvenate that, to give more life to the process of hearing and chanting and remembering, Krishna has come out of his compassion. All the things that he does, all the other reasons, were also out of his compassion for his devotees, or because of his relationship with his devotees. So this is also in his relationship with his devotees, even though they have turned their back on him, or the conditioned jiva souls. So, but still they are his devotees, but we have amnesia, and we think ourselves as separate from Krishna, as something other than his servant. What does amnesia mean?
And you like forget stuff, like everything.
You like forget stuff, everything. Yeah, all the stuff, including who you are.
Yeah.
Even your identity. You think, who am I? And when you think like that, you also have to scratch your head, because that's what people do when they... And now, he's going to And then the last verse we read were, those who continuously hear, and she sang this to Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities or take pleasure, nandanti tavehi tam jana, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. And actually, I don't know who I heard, I was listening to Prabhupada speak in a room conversation today, and I heard him today, just in a room conversation in 1976 in Hyderabad, and he was appreciating the preaching and the book distribution of Prabhupada Vishnu. And he said this preaching, this is because you asked that question last time, he said this preaching was the shortcut method of pleasing Krishna. He actually used that term, the shortcut method. And he said, Krishna, and he said, Ya idam paramam guhyam. He quotes Krishna, he quoted Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter. He says, there's the one who explains this message of Bhagavad Gita to others or to the devotees is dear to me, and no one is more dear to me than him. And Prabhupada said that Krishna doesn't say that one who goes alone to a quiet place and meditates on me is the most dear to me. Yeah, so it was very interesting. So I thought of that in relationship to the point that you raised last time in the form of a question. Of the nandanti. What does nandanti mean? One who gets pleasure from others hearing about Krishna or becoming Krishna conscious. So in the verse that we're going to hear, Krishna willing, right now, is the 37th verse. Adya, adya, apyadyanastvam swa kritehita hita prabhu.
Apyadyanastvam swa kritehita prabhu.
Jihasasihi svit surido anujivana.
Jihasasihi svit
surido anujivana. Yesham lakshanyat bhavata padambhujat.
Yesham lakshanyat bhavata padambhujat.
Parayanam rajasu yojitam hasam.
Parayanam rajasu yojitam hasam.
So, Kunti Devi now shifts her mood to what in the next two sections she moves to what she really wants to say to Krishna. You like this verse, yes? She wants to say something to Krishna. Her heart is melting, really, out of fear, out of fear of separation from Krishna, because Krishna is going to leave the Pandavas, who are the kings of Hastinapur, the world, and go back to Dwarka, because his mission has been accomplished, or most of his mission has been accomplished. So she says, so in a very, very, very soft and loving, affectionate mood, she says, Api, Adyana, are you, if you today leave, are you today leaving, you, Twam, Swakritehi Tam Prabhu, oh my Lord? So she's calling her nephew my Lord, because she's, and yet she's going to express so much love. So both moods are somehow or another, by the strength of her love, combining together and yet not contradicting each other, not causing her to be confused in any way. Are you, Swakrita means, and Swakrihita means that all your duties are self-executed, that you do everything by yourself, and yet you're leaving us, saying that you have to get back to Dwarka because it's your duty, but actually everything is done by your will, and because you want to do it, because you desire to do it. in your own inconceivable way. Jihasasi swit surido anujivana. How could you give up jihasasi? How swit? How is it possible for you to give us up? Who are your surid? Surida. Rid means the heart, and surid means very intimate, close to the heart, friends. We are your most intimate friends. Anujivana. And we are our life. Anu means like following, and jivana means mercy. Our life is dependent on your mercy. And yet, you're leaving us today? This is inconceivable not in a philosophical sense inconceivable, but the inconceivability of being separate from Krishna is apparent to her at this moment. But how is it possible that he can leave? And then, because if he leaves, we won't be with him. So that's inconceivable to me. How can this happen? Obviously, from the point of view of a philosophical truth, anyone could walk away and get on a plane nowadays, or walk, or get on a chariot, as Krishna was going to do, and leave. So she's not talking about how is it possible for you to do this from a philosophical, practical point of view, but how is this going to happen? And then what is she going to say? What is she going to say to try to convince Krishna not to leave? So she says, Yesham Nachanyat Bhavita Padam Bhujam Parayanam Rajasu Yojitam Hasam. That all these different, that not only are we completely dependent on you, but Yesham Nachanyat. We are not dependent on anyone else. It's only you who is our complete shelter and dependence. And you're going to leave us. We're completely dependent. Padam Bhujat. We have no other shelter other than your lotus feet. We have no other wealth. We care about nothing other than your service and your affection and your friendship and your association, and you're leaving us. Oh, so intimately in relationship with you. And to make her case, she's not thinking in a manipulative way, but this is pouring from her heart. Parayanam Rajasu Yojitam Hasam. When all the kings, the Rajasu, unto the kings, were so dependent on you, and they're in enmity with us. Okay, it's true that so many of these our enemies were killed in the great Kurukshetra war, but their relatives, their sons and grandsons, still exist, and they're so angry at us, and they're going to attack, and we are so dependent on your mercy. We have no one but you, and you're going to leave us now in this precarious position under the plea that now Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandavas are enthroned as the kings, but the danger is not over. So here is Srila Prabhupada's translation. Please.
Oh, my Lord.
But I want you to read it with some. Do you have some?
Yes. Oh, yes. My Lord. You have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today? Though we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us, now when all kings are at enmity with us...
At? All kings are?
At?
Enmity.
Enmity with us?
Yes. You know what enmity means?
Yeah. Like, they're enemies with you.
Yes. They're all inimical. Enmity. They're inimical with us. You get the next one, okay? I don't know if we'll get to it today, but it's yours. Tomorrow, if not today. So this is, she's really moving into what she wants to say, and the remaining verses are also heartfelt. Not that the others weren't, but her mood comes out even stronger and more directly. Now here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Pandavas are most fortunate, because with all good luck, they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. So what was the great fortune of the Pandavas?
They got to meet Krishna.
Okay, but I'm going to read this sentence again. The Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck, they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. So what was their great fortune?
They were dependent on the Lord.
Yeah, they were completely dependent on Krishna, and he was now leaving. So that was intolerably heartbreaking for Kunti Devi. Now, it's a very interesting sentence. The Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck, they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. But the Pandavas, if you look at their life, even Bhishma Dev said, how did you stay alive with the tribulations and difficulties that fate has put you through? They lived in the forest. Their kingdom was stolen away from them. They couldn't get, and they suffered. And everywhere they went, they had to hide. And if they were discovered, even if their identity was discovered, they had to go on for another 14 or so years in the forest. So such difficulty, and there were kings, and Draupadi was with them. Who was a princess and living in such a harsh forest life with no computers. Just imagine how difficult it was. No newspapers. No
Wi-Fi.
No Wi-Fi. And no heaters. And that was what I really wanted to say. But then I realized they lit fires when it was cold, so I did. They had heaters. But yet, Prabhupada is saying they are most fortunate because the sum total, because, and this is exactly the point of the verse of what Kunti Devi said earlier, is that we prefer, I and my sons, we all prefer to be with you and consider that the greatest fortune, even if being with you means that we are in difficulty in so many other ways, catastrophic circumstances in so many other ways. Just being with you, it defines good fortune for us. So Prabhupada says the Pandavas are most fortunate, so that their being with Krishna defines their fortune, and not being with Krishna defines misfortune for them. So we can just imagine, first of all, what devotion is and what love actually is and what pleasure must come from being with Krishna. Because we all know what difficulty and misery is like, and it's not fun at all. It's not pleasurable at all. Do you know what difficulty and misery is like? I hope not. But do you know a little bit? But that, the biggest difficulty, external material difficulty, turns to the smallest of inconveniences. What's the difference between an inconvenience and a catastrophe?
An inconvenience is like small and catastrophe is big.
Okay, why don't you give an example that you could say an inconvenience is like this and a catastrophe is like this.
Inconvenience is your car runs out of fuel.
Yeah.
Catastrophe is somebody you know passes away.
Yeah. I was thinking like an atomic bomb falls on your head. but what you said was also a good. And I bet every one of us was thinking right then what a catastrophe was. Do you think what a catastrophe is? Compare that. No, good. Good. We hope that you won't know what catastrophes are. So the sum total of good luck, of fortune, they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord, that it's such an unmaterialistic way of viewing what fortune is. And Prabhupada continues by saying, in the material world, to be dependent on the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune. But in the case of our transcendental relation with the Lord, it is the most fortunate case when we can live completely dependent on Him. Now that is a statement of what the foundation of Krishna consciousness is. Be dependent on Krishna, and everyone is trying to do just the opposite. Try to become dependent on what do we usually depend on? I mean, there's the usual things. Like if you happen to go outside of your house, you leave in the morning and go to work without your mobile phone or your credit cards or something, and you think, oh, dangerous. Huh?
Catastrophe.
Right. What will I do? How will I go on? But it really feels like that. It really does. But to be completely depending on Krishna and to feel secure in His in that dependence on Him is the greatest fortune. And life is actually meant for us to learn that lesson. Because right now, we're thinking, if I don't have my credit card, if I don't have my mobile phone, what happens if something bad happens? And what happens if Krishna doesn't actually protect me? Secretly, of course, we won't tell anyone what happens if it's all. It's like the Simpsons cartoon or something like that. No, what's the Simpsons? Wiggles? Mr. Wiggles? Is there such a thing as Mr. Wiggles?
It's.
Yes. What happens if it's something like that? What happens if I'm not enough of a devotee? Maybe I don't doubt Krishna, but maybe I even doubt myself that he's. Because I know what my life has been like. So what happens if Krishna, he also knows what happened to me? He says, no, sorry. Do I really have a loving relationship with Krishna? Does he really love me? And is he really going to take care of me? Life is meant to answer that question. And what we practice in life will be tested at the moment when our body fails us. And then all the other durasraya, the false shelters, the things that we take shelter of but don't really have the capacity to give us shelter, the things we take shelter of but don't actually have the capacity to give us shelter, they'll prove to be what they are, meaning useless. And Prabhupada sometimes would give the example of like holding on to a dog's tail, a dog who's swimming in the ocean, trying to cross the ocean by holding on to the tail of a dog. Now, what do you think about that example? Trying to cross, do you swim?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you decide you're going to swim, because the Indian Ocean is here, right? Right? And if you decide you're going to swim to Jagannath Puri, and because it's a long way, you decide you'll need help. And you decide, oh, you see a dog in the ocean, so you're going to hold on to his tail and then he'll... What do you think about this example?
You're
going to
drown the dog.
Huh? It's true. It's true, but not only will the dog drown, but it's going to be rough for you too, which is also what the dog is saying. Rough, rough. He's warning you. This isn't going to work. It's rough. Did you think that was funny? A little bit. Okay. Something. It is the most fortunate case when we can live completely dependent on him. Etansa staya paratmanistam. This is what we are meant to do, to cross over the ocean of material existence by taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, the Paramatma, the Paramatma. The material disease is due to thinking of becoming independent of everything. But the cruel material nature does not allow us to become independent. The false attempt to become independent of the stringent laws of nature, stringent means strict, unbreakable laws of nature, is known as material advancement of experimental knowledge. The whole material world is moving on this false attempt of becoming independent of the laws of nature. Beginning from Ravana, who wanted to prepare a direct staircase to the planets of heaven, down to the present age, they're trying to overcome the laws of nature. What's an example of that today? Raise your hand if you can think of an example.
Finding life in Mars or making colonies in Mars.
Going to the moon planet,
Stay alive forever. The whole medical industry is based on that, isn't it? Yes.
Trying to take a bird wings and fly.
Trying to fly because one wouldn't say that it's natural for a human being to fly. And some people have said if God wanted you to fly, he would have given you wings. It's been said like that. Or in previous times, people would stay in their village and be quite satisfied. They would be peaceful living in their village without knowing what's going on in every other village, in every other country, in every other part of the world, and people are actually satisfied. And now we think that's very, very primitive, but they had satisfaction. Is satisfaction primitive? Because no one has it anymore. People have anxiety. So many things. Just trying to conquer, find a new and better way to do that. How about eating? How about with fertilizers? They have chemical fertilizers that go against Krishna's way of fertilizing. That's Krishna's way, but we have a better idea than Krishna. We can. Previously, people used to take seeds. If there are any farmers here, they used to take seeds, and then when the plant would grow to, would, if they'd harvest the plant, the weed or whatever it was would go to seed, and they would take the seeds. But we have a better idea now. We're going to genetically modify these seeds, and you'll get a greater crop. And we put in the petrochemical fertilizers, and you'll get more and more. We have a better way than Krishna made it. We use tractors instead of bulls, and these cows that eat grass and turn grass into milk, we have a better way. We'll just eat the cows. Then we don't have to worry about anything. And then if you're running out of vitamins and everything, we'll give you vitamin pills. Prabhupada called that pilly consciousness. So many things. We're not going to read this whole purport because it's so wonderful and well written by Srila Prabhupada and powerful that I don't want to just go over it quickly. So to be independent of the laws of nature, to be independent of the laws of God is the attempt of contemporary society, and the result of having a better way to do everything is society is in a very difficult condition. Okay, we'll end here, but tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall continue. Okay, thank you very much. Can we
put it on there?
Yeah, put it on. Can we? The computer's on Wi-Fi too, right?
Yes.
Why not? Jagannathathyatra is on at this very moment. Would you like to see?
Yes.
Jai Jagannath.
I thought we were going to look at Lord Rama for imitation, not Krishna. So why should? So why are people imitating eating dirt?
Who's imitating eating dirt?
Everyone.
Everyone is eating dirt?
Okay, not everyone, but...
Oh, you're trying to get out of having to eat some bread? Okay. See, to know what to do and know what is imitable... See, Lord, we don't imitate everything that Lord Ramachandra did. Like, he fought with 14,000 rakshasas. So it's not like we're going to ask you to do that or anything. Okay? But we have to know what to imitate and what not to imitate. So the way we know what to do and who to imitate at what time, we follow the path chalked out by the great devotees. And one time... Someone came to the Los Angeles temple in 1969 and offered, someone came from Vrindavan and offered Prabhupada some dust of Vrindavan. And the devotees had never seen anything like this before. Prabhupada went like this. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, one grain, okay? You don't have to worry about it. One grain will be good for your brain. Two grains will be better for your brain. And everyone else can take some too if they like. You want to consult with your lawyer in the back, row to see what he's going to advise in this case. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Kunti Devi ki jai. Jai Jagannath.